Hello, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. We are proudly celebrating 113 years of operation of the nation's oldest and largest public affairs forum. My name is Sandy Hunt, and I'm a member of the club's personal growth member-led forum, and I'm going to be your chair for today. We are pleased to have all of you at the event, and we welcome any new club members, and we look forward to seeing all of you again. I also want to welcome our listening audience, and we invite you to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now, I have a quick plug that's required for the next Personal Growth Forum, and that will be next week, June 2nd, at noon. It will be Sherry Turkle, MIT professor and author, will be here to discuss her new research on the topic of Reclaiming Conversation, the Power of Talk in a Digital Age. You may sign up for this by going to the website. Now for our program. Every once in a while, you have the opportunity to meet someone you know will have a positive impact on the world. For me, it was meeting Ashanti Branch. But I must be clear with you, Ashanti Branch was discovered long before I met him. He has a long list of accomplishments. A civil engineering degree, a master's degree, a Fulbright fellowship to India, a Rotary fellow to Mexico, teaching administrative credentials, teacher of the year in math, yay. And most recently, his Ever Forward Club has a major feature in an award-winning Sundance documentary. And finally, he was selected to be a project fellow at Stanford's D School. That's quite an impressive list for someone as young as Ashanti. But why I particularly wanted Ashanti to come to the Commonwealth Club was to help us understand how he took his education and experience to creatively come up with an idea, a technique, a solution to first his students to help them and then to us to connect with them through his taking off the mask. Join me in welcoming Ashanti Branch and the panelists that I would like you to wave and identify yourself, Christian Green, Ambrosio Pablo, Dana Williams, and Deontay Hill. Let's give them a welcome.
Well, good afternoon. I'm really thankful to be here right now. You know, when I was listening to Sandy read off accomplishments, it was kind of a moment for me to remember that all those things had happened. You know, I was born in Oakland, California, and I was raised by a single mother, and we were on welfare most of my life. And growing up, I never imagined, I could have envisioned this moment today. You see, if I tell you that I was raised poor, your recollection of understanding what I'm saying only matters if you understand or you really have a deep empathy for what it means to be poor. You see, I grew up in a community where being smart was not seen as okay. Like when I showed up here on the planet, when I entered the world from the womb, like life had already thrown some obstacles in my way. Like my father died 3 months before I was born. His father died 3 months before he was born. And that wasn't my fault. Like no one gave me an option. Like if you had handed me a checklist in the womb and said, hey, how do you want this life thing to work out? I would have chosen things to look very differently. I wouldn't have chosen to grow up poor. But as my mom was preparing for this boy to come into the world, all of a sudden these generations of legacy is taken away. And my father was looking forward to being a father. Like, he loved my mom. And so I showed up, and the things were a mess. Things were in shambles. We're trying to figure it out. Like, I'm just getting carried along, drifting along, hoping that we can just make it for the next day. And I want you to know that I never, ever expected to be a teacher. That was never in my list of things that was going to happen in my life. Like, I was like, the dream is go to college, get a good job, make some money, then live happy. That's how it was going to work out. Now, when I got to middle school, elementary, you can be smart and it still be okay because you're only with 30 kids all day. So you can kind of just deal with people talking smack about you. You can deal with those 30. But when you went to middle school, you got 150 kids. You got like six classes. You got multiple people looking at you funny because you want to be smart. So I learned that smart is not cool. So I fell into that trap. It was like, hey, I'll act like I don't know this stuff. I don't care about this stuff. Do whatever you want. Give me detention. Don't call my mom. That's one thing I don't want you to do. So I try to do everything so you don't call my house because that's going to make more problems. But I'm not doing your work. I don't care about your class. And if I think that you care more about science than you care about me, we're done. Our relationship teacher is over. If you care more about history than you do about my life, if you care more about physical education than the fact that there are people dying in the street in front of my house, then we're done. And I can tell. And so when I got to middle school, it was a mess. And if it wasn't for a teacher, Ms. Bartlett Preston, I will never forget it. We called her Ms. BP. Ms. BP saved my life. One day I got in trouble. It wasn't my fault, right? I told her, somebody put a tack in my chair. You know, they used to do that back in the day. They put these little tacks in your chair. You sit on a tack. You yell. Everyone should yell. I yelled. She said, I'll see you after school. I'm like, what? So I come back after school because she can't call my house. I got to show up because if I don't show up, she's going to call my house. And she starts talking to me. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm not listening to anything she has to say. I'm just going to look at the ceiling in the corner. I'm going to hear her talking. I'm going to agree to everything she says because that's what we do when we don't really want to hear. We just agree to whatever you say. You're supposed to do that, right? Yep, you're right. Like, our teenagers know that. So I knew that all I do is answer everything she said with the right answer, and she's going to let me go. But this is one thing I did here because I ignored everything else. This is what I did here. She said, "Life. I know you're upset and sad that your father is dead, that your father's not around. But life doesn't give us what we want. Life gives us what we get, and we have to make the most out of it." And I don't know how long she was talking, but that sentence, that statement I remembered, and it changed my life. And so I began to act like I had a focus, like I had a dream. Like, even though my father had died before I was born, my vision was then, instead of being angry about that, it was like, I want to make sure that if he could see me, he would be proud to call me his son. My context changed in about 24 hours. The teachers were like, what happened to this kid? What's wrong with you? You're paying attention. You're doing work. Because it wasn't that I couldn't do the work. I didn't care about the work. And from that point on, it began to change. And so I go to high school. They're like, okay, work hard. Get a degree. Go to college. So sophomore year, I applied to this program called Upward Bound. And the lady says, well, unfortunately, you can't qualify because you're not first generation. I said, of course I am. I'm first generation. Like, no, your mom's a teacher. I was like, you mean my mom went to college? You mean we're this broke and my mom actually has an education? Something is wrong. Who chooses to go to college to have a job where you can barely pay your bills? So I knew one thing at that moment, I would never ever be a teacher. That was one thing I knew for sure. But the other thing I was thinking was, man, something has to change. Something absolutely has to change in my life that I'm going to make sure that I'm focused on education, that I'm focused on doing something better in my life, that I'm not going to be a teacher. And so I go off to college, become an engineer, and I'm working. I'm making really good money in engineering. You know, I'm a poor boy from Oakland, and now I'm an engineer, and I'm making really good money. That feels really good. You should be happy. Like, you should be really happy the fact that you now make money and that you can pay all the bills and then still have something left over at the end. That was a very novel idea for me. Like, all the bills are paid and I still have something left over in the bank. But why am I not happy? Why does this thing that people told me I was working hard for happening to me? And I'm not happy. I'm coming home every day. I'm playing video games, having a good time with that. But really, something's missing. So one day, I was leaving my office, and I noticed these kids in the lobby. And I said, well, why are there kids in the lobby of this office building? So one day at lunch, I just pop around that corner where I saw the kids coming from. And the lady was like, oh, are you looking for a job? I said, I don't need no job. I'm an engineer. What do you think? I don't need no job. She said, oh, well, we need somebody to tutor math. Could you tutor for us? I said, tutoring? Now, all I was doing when I left work anyway was going home playing video games. So I was like, well, hey, $20 an hour, that's some good traveling money. I love math. I can do the math pretty quick. And so this is when it all started to change, right? I told you I was never, ever going to be a teacher. Didn't see any coming. So one day, I'm tutoring a kid named Lucas. Now, Lucas doesn't do well multiplying polynomials. I love multiplying polynomials. Multiplying polynomials I do for fun. Like, I do them, like, it's like fun. And he can't do them. I said, well, look, can I show you a shortcut? He said, well, if you think it will work. I'm like, well, let me try. So I show him a little shortcut. He does it. He says, is it right? I said, I don't know. Check the back of the book. He checks the back of the book. Light turns on. And that feeling, that moment, like, so, let me take it back. It wasn't just he checked the back of the book, he got the right answer. It was like he turned the back of the book, he looked at the answer, and then the page started to glow. And this glow was on his face that I saw and I felt, and I was like, oh no. Oh no, you are not, why am I feeling this right now that I just helped a kid learn some math, but it was clear that something was changing in my life. I was clear. And so I went to the front desk after I finished tutoring him, and I said, hey, I'm going to take a couple of weeks off because I can't have this happening. Because if you're telling me that this is what makes me feel really enlivened, it makes me feel like I come alive, and I know teachers don't make money. I was already clear about what was about to happen, what was happening, and I ran from it. And they kept calling, can you come help us? I said, I'll help with this one kid, but then after that, I'm out. But it changed my life. And as much as I ran from it, teaching called me. And so I went back to school. I said, well, at least I can always go back and do engineering. So I'm going to do this teaching thing for a little while. I'm going to just test it out. I'm going to just play around with it. So first year teaching, San Lorenzo High School, and I'm failing. Like, I'm a teacher who came to teaching because I wanted to teach, and I'm failing. Like, there are young men in my class who are really smart, but they're failing my class. And at the moment, I didn't see the connection. I didn't see the connection. But I knew they had to do something. Because I was either, I'm like, look, I'm going to go back to make money. I'll go back and make money if I can't do this well. Because I'm not going to be, I accepted that as a teacher, I was going to be broke. Like, I made that acceptance. As a teacher, I'm not going to get paid well. I was cool with that. But I didn't sign up to be a failure. I'm not going to be broke and a failure. So I'm like, look, young man. So I invited some young men to lunch. I said, hey, look, I'll buy you lunch once a week. Exchange for lunch. Teach me how to be a better teacher. Like, tell me what I'm doing wrong, because I'll fix it. Like, I don't really want to be failing you in my class, and you're smart enough to pass my class. So tell me what I need to do differently, and I'll fix it. And it wasn't until those conversations happened over lunch where I began to see them in me. I began to see myself in them. It ain't cool being smart. I ain't walking around with no big old backpack. I ain't no nerd. I ain't no geek. I ain't no teacher's pet. Everything about smart to them was negative. Now, as an adult, because I remember being them, no matter what I tell them, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. I could tell them, hey, it's not true. There's nothing wrong with being smart. Smart is good. But if you believe that, if the society around you makes you believe that, then it's real, especially being 14, 15, 16, a teenager, and the years of absolute influence by your peers is really real. So we began to figure out systems around it. And that's how the Ever Forward Club was born. I had no idea I was starting an organization. I was not trying to start a nonprofit organization. I didn't even know what a nonprofit organization was. The way I realized that nonprofit organizations existed was somebody said, hey, I would love to give you a check. Do you have a nonprofit number? I'm like, what is that? She was like, you don't know what that is? I'm like, no, I'm not creating a nonprofit. I'm a teacher helping some students pass algebra. Because do you know that passing algebra is not just passing algebra? That if you don't pass algebra, you don't graduate high school. So not passing my class, I was an algebra teacher, means that you are not going to qualify to graduate high school. So the stakes are much bigger than just this one class. And so I knew that. And so what I'm going to do right now is we have some young men here today. And so I want you to hear from them. I want you to hear from them. Now, the Everfour Club started in 2004. I was a first-year teacher just trying to figure out. 12 years later, we are now in 9 schools. We're growing. As you heard, we are featuring this documentary called The Mask You Live In, which you're going to get to see a clip from in a second. But I want you to hear from some of the young men who are currently in our program. And they're going to tell you what grade they're in, why they're in the club, what it's doing for them, where they're going next year. And then I'll be back. Okay. Who's going first? Christian's going first.
My name is Christian. I live in San Lorenzo. I attend Edendale Middle School. And I joined Everfour Club like 2 years ago. And something like I learned from the Everfour Club is how to be a better man and how to show integrity. And how to make better choices for myself.
What grade are you in?
I'm in the 8th grade.
And where are you going next year?
SL.
What does that mean?
San Leandro.
My name is Ambrosio, and I go to Rice High School, and I'm about to graduate. I'm a 12th grader right now. And I'm headed for Berkeley with a full ride. Yeah. And so I joined Everfour Club when I as a freshman, and it was like school during registration day. And so my school was like, oh, go up to any of those panels up there and try to find a club that you will join. And so I went up to, well, the first one I went up to was the one that Branch was presenting. So then I talked to him, and he told me to register for his club and that it was going to be cool and everything, and it would help me throughout high school. And so, you know, I didn't want to ignore him. So I was like, so I signed up. I wrote my name, my phone number, my mom's phone number, and because I didn't have a phone. So then the first day of school, it was like a Monday or something, and then like his clubs were like Tuesdays and Thursdays. So then he would track us down, me and other friends, like he would track us down, and so to make us go to the club, because at first I didn't want to join like, you know, a club. I was just trying to go home after school and not stay. And but you know, so he was all after us. So then I went, and then the first thing was we ate. He gave us food, and that got me plugged. That got me like into his club a little bit, because you know he was providing food. And then throughout, like, he just started talking to us and making us like form groups. And then I had barely came back from Washington. So well, not coming back, but I had barely moved into California from Washington. And I didn't really know anybody, right? So, and Fremont is the school that I went to. And that's where I started. And then, so, I didn't know nobody. And so, you know, I went to his club. And then I started knowing a couple people, starting to, like, be introduced. And then from there, I started making friends. And so, I started building connections with them. And as well as for his club, I started to know more about him and what he did, and it was pretty cool, you know. And then throughout the, well, I was a good student, you know, it was freshman year. So I was a good student. I had my grades up, so it wasn't much of a help that he was there. But, you know, like throughout 11th grade to 12th grade, you know, he was on my back on everything. He kept telling me, oh, did you do this? He called me and he was like, have you done that? You know, you need to take responsibility, because I was falling back on that. And so throughout that, up till today, he's, you know, he's always on my back, always telling me what to do. Well, not what to do, but, you know, like always telling me to do my work and everything. And so it was really great to have him, you know, in my life, because, you know, I feel like he was part of my he was part of what I have accomplished. You know, he was like the main reason I have accomplished what I've accomplished, and that's like, and that is getting to college. And, you know, yeah.
My name is Deontay. I was in the Ever 4 Club for a year now. This is my first year, yeah. I got introduced by these two. It's the only reason why I came. But when I started going more, like, I liked it a little more, and they showed me that they cared about me and taught me to be a better man, make better choices, and that's it.
My name is Dana. I've been here for 2 years. I got introduced by Branch. At first, I didn't want to go because it sounded like a boring name, Ever Forward Club. So the first 2 weeks, I didn't go. But then the week after, I went, and it was kind of cool. But the stuff that we was talking about was like, I don't know, I was pressured. Like, they were asking too many questions, and I didn't feel like answering them. But this group helped me learn how to become more of a man than I was back then. That's it.
So in a minute, they're going to get a chance to say some more, right? And I thank you all for welcoming them, because I think for them to be in this opportunity is really incredible, to have an audience to hear you. So when we're in a circle and they know each other, we can get real pretty quickly, right? They can talk about their day, what happened during their day. They can talk about the challenges of life. What are the challenges being a young man today? And imagine that. You know, sometimes when we're asking people how they're doing, hey, how you doing? What do we expect them to respond? Fine. Okay. Good. Cool. Because oftentimes we don't really have time for them to answer the question for real. Oftentimes we're saying it as we're passing them with the body language that I just need you to say it quick so I can keep moving. Right? Sometimes. And you know you, so I'm only speaking for what I've seen and what I've experienced as a teacher, walking down the hall with teachers. Hey, how you doing? Good. Good. Hang, you know, you don't really ask because you don't really have the time. But when we sit in a circle, when we come together, it's about how are you doing, really? Like, if I call one of them on the phone and ask them how they're doing, they say fine, I'm going to say, what am I going to say? What's fine? Because fine means different things to different people. Right? If I say to you, if you say, I'm good, well, what's good for you? Good is very different for different people. And so what we're going to see right now is you're going to see the trailer to The Mask You Live In. The documentary was done by Jennifer Siebel Newsom. When her producers had heard about our work, they asked, could they come and film? And I was at Fremont High School where Ambrosio first met me. I was working as like the dean there. And there was a lot of young men who were not doing well in school. They were failing many classes. They were not connected to their own self of who they were and what they wanted to be. And so what I told them, I said, if you want to come, just so you know, all the young men in my circle, most of them, they lie. They're like, what do you mean? I said, well, when we check in about how you're doing on a scale from 1 to 10, they all say I'm a 10. But they're not all 10s. Because we're in my office talking one-on-one. I know that, man, you got 4 referrals today. How is that a 10? You're dealing with this. You're dealing with this. But in a circle, my job is to just hold space. And oftentimes I have to hold space even when they're not really telling the truth to each other. And what we have done with the opportunity of taking off the mask is, how do we help humans? In this context, how do we help our young men have a safe place to talk about the stuff that's really going on? Like our society, let me let you see this. And then it will make more sense. And then I'm going to have the young men talk about their experience of when they first went through the workshop. And then some of you today have gone through the workshop before we started, and we're going to talk about that. So we're going to now let you hear the trailer for The Mask You Live In by The Representation Project.
Stop crying.
Stop with the tears.
Don't cry.
Pick yourself up.
Stop with the emotions.
Don't be a pussy.
Don't let nobody disrespect you.
Be cool and be kind of a dick.
Always keep your mouth shut.
Nobody likes a tattletale.
Bros come before hoes.
Don't let your woman run your life.
You a bitch.
What a fag.
Get laid. Do something.
Be a man.
Be a man.
Grow some balls.
The 3 most destructive words that every man receives when he's a boy is when he's told to be a man.
We've constructed an idea of masculinity in the United States that doesn't give young boys a way to feel secure in their masculinity, so we make them go prove it all the time.
Within their peer group culture, each of them is posturing based on how the other boys are posturing, and what they end up missing is what they each really want, which is just that closeness.
In good times, guys are like really close to each other, but when things get a little bit worse, you're on your own.
From middle school, I had 4 really close friends. Once I kind of went into high school, I struggle finding people I can talk to because I feel like I'm not supposed to get help.
Our kids get up every morning. They have to prepare their mask for how they're going to walk to school. A lot of our students don't know how to take the mask off. What is it you don't let people see? Almost 90% of you have pain and anger on the back of that paper.
If you never cry, then you have all these feelings stuffed up inside of you, and then you can't get them out.
They really buy into a culture that doesn't value what we've feminized. If we're in a culture that doesn't value caring, doesn't value relationships, doesn't value empathy, you are going to have boys and girls, men and women, go crazy.
I had anger issues in high school. I felt like an outcast.
I've been suspended at least once every year I was here.
We would just look for trouble and just like try to fight.
Boys are more likely to act out. They're more likely to become aggressive. Most people miss that as depression or see it as a conduct disorder or just a bad kid.
I felt like just giving up on life. You know, I just had suicide thoughts in my head at 6th grade.
I felt alone for a long time, and I actually thought about killing myself.
Whether it's homicidal violence or suicidal violence, people resort to such desperate behavior only when they are feeling shamed and humiliated, or feel they would be if they didn't prove that they were real men.
If you're told from day one, don't let nobody disrespect you, and this is the way you handle it as a man, respect is linked to violence.
If I can man up, why step down from that? You feel me?
It's like instinct.
Like a man.
Be a man.
Be a man.
For my kids, I was going to end this hyper-masculine narrative here.
Take a breath. That was a lot in 3 minutes. Do you feel it? Like, have you seen it in our society? Young men, have you seen it? You see, the documentary is 1.5 hours. It's incredible. And it's when you leave there, if you've been paying attention, it's really hard not to feel it. Even after watching this trailer many times and watching the full documentary over 30 times, I still feel it. And I feel it because I'm working with these young men every day who are dealing with this stuff on a daily basis, trying to figure out how do they show how much of a man they are? How do they show how tough they are? Because society says you can't show the other emotions. You can't be sad. Well, at least not growing up in Oakland, you can't. Where I grew up, you can't be afraid. Human emotions that our young men are forced to stuff away as if they don't exist because people around them, society says, if you show it, then now you have another label on top of you of weakness. And 93% of those people who we incarcerate in this country are men. 93%. I don't have the statistics of how many of them are violent crimes or things like that, but here's what I do know working as an administrator in a middle school, an administrator in a high school, a teacher for over 11 years, is that our young men are carrying around baggage and trauma that they don't have a safe place of letting go of. And when I started the Ever Forward Club, once I realized that, okay, smart's not cool, how do we help you get past that? How do we help you get past the things that you're actually dealing with in a really healthy way? I realized that I got to give them a place to let go of some of the baggage. It's easy to say there's a level playing field because, oh, we let everybody into our college, but it's very different than if I grew up with 15 bags attached to me that have pain and sadness and trauma attached to me, and another person didn't. So even though the access at the gate may be open and even to both of us, I'm carrying around so much stuff, I can't even move through the gate. The field doesn't look the same to me. And so today, right now, some of you have had an experience today. You had a chance when you came in to draw a mask. Think about what are those characteristics that you gladly let the world see about you? What are those things that you gladly let people see? Those are your claim to who you are, to your name. And then, the other side, right? What are the stuff that we don't talk about? Now, you may not hide it. You may just say, we just don't talk about that stuff. And so the young men are going to talk about their first experience when they remembered drawing their own mask. And some of them may remember more details than others, and it's okay. But I want them to speak about when you remember going through the Taking Off the Mask workshop. And then after you all explain that, then they're going to read a mask that they have in front of you from some other young man here in the Bay Area. And so we'll first have you each talk about your experience going through the Taking Off the Mask workshop that you remember, if you remember.
Well, for me, when I first did it, it was hard. We were asked some questions, two questions, the three characteristics that we let people see and three characteristics that we don't. And writing the ones that we let people see, it was easy, you know, like it was just the things we let people see, you know. And then the second question, it was hard, you know, and especially since like the people I did it with were people that I didn't know. It was here, right? I don't really remember when I first did it, but I just know that when I did it, it was hard putting down my feelings on that paper, and you know, not knowing that I will be sharing it with people. But you know, it was something I had to write down because I was trying to let go of it. You know, trying to have some pounds taken off of me. So I wrote it down, and it was thrown around, and then it was picked up by someone else. And yeah, so they didn't know it was mine. So yeah.
Any other one want to speak to it? You didn't do it. Dana, Christian, go ahead.
The experience when I first did that project was like I couldn't trust nobody. I thought I put my name on it first, and like if one of my friends saw my name on it, saw how I felt about some of the stuff, they'd tease me or use it against me. One of these days, I'm trying to roast them or something. But then, after that, when Branch gave me more detail about it, I kind of felt safe because we had made this bond, like, where everything we say in that room can only stay in that room. And some people was like, whoa, like I couldn't do it. Like they didn't want to write their feelings on there because they knew that people probably like see what they drew and remember that they drew that. And they look at the words they wrote, like they was feeling depressed and stuff. And so then I felt like I shouldn't have did it. But then I actually just did it because I felt like it was safe.
Same thing that Christian said. I didn't want to write three of my fears because I thought somebody was going to look at my drawing and see and try to use that against me, like he said, if we try to roast. But I learned that it's a rule that we have called confidentiality. When something, if someone stays something in the room, it stays in the room. So I learned to trust more people.
Thank you. So now what you're going to hear is there's a mask they have in front of them, and they're from somewhere. They're going to just read one of the masks they have, what's on the front, and then they're going to read what's on the back. So you can just take it in. Like, these are young men here in the Bay Area. So listen to what they have to say. They picked the one they wanted to read. So read the front and then read the back.
The first mask says, athletic, smart, leader, I guess. And on the back it says, lack of confidence, stress, anger.
Mine says, in the front it says, friendly, happiness, and open-minded. And then on the back it says, sadness, sensitivity, emotional.
On the front of mine it says, athlete, both friendliness and humor. On the back it says, fear, rejection, fear in general, and sadness.
On the front of mine, it says, lazy, fun dude, creative, and constant, trying to be different. On the back, it says, introspective, angry, sad, disconnected from everything, and lonely.
And I have a few that I'm going to read. So on the front says, calm, happy, caring, and the back, not certain, sometimes bored, impatient. Another one says on the front, confident, warm, intelligent. On the back, shy, introverted, anxious. Another one says positive, happy, and kind. And the back says negative, angry, and mean. Like, what do you notice about what's on the front compared to what's on the back? It's often a complete opposite. What else do you notice? That sum it up? Okay, I'm sorry. Say what you said, ma'am. Similar things that people are trying to portray and similar things that they're dealing with. Thank you. Sir? Positive on the front and some negative on the back. A lot of fear and anger on the back. And so in our work, what we tell people, we tell students, we do these workshops for educators. People bring us in to do professional development for educators. And they bring us in to do these workshops with young men all over, so far as Tennessee. That's as far east as we've gotten to Tennessee. New York is on the way, I'm sure, or somewhere on the East Coast. But no matter where we are, I tell people, look, I'm not telling you that don't have a mask. I think we all have a mask. And I think oftentimes a mask is for protection. Like, if I know that going to school, that these three are in middle school and Ambrosius in high school, if I know that in middle school I cannot show this part of myself because it's going to make them roast on me, it's going to make me look weak to everybody else, then maybe my mask is to protect me from the ridicule that I don't really want to deal with. And so sometimes it's our protection, it's our safety net to be who we think we need to be in certain situations. But where I do talk to young people about being a problem is that when you don't know the difference between who you are for real and who you have to portray yourself to be for the world. Like, if you never, ever deal with the sadness, with the pain, with the fear, with the anger, you never deal with it in a healthy way, my belief, and what we believe in the Ever Forward Club, is that it will come out sometimes, oftentimes, in unhealthy ways. Like, when a student throws a chair because the teacher said, hey, move your seat over there, he's not really mad about you telling him to move his seat. It probably was something that happened before school, at lunchtime, before he walked in your classroom. But the moment that you told him to move his chair, the moment of eruption was about to happen. You couldn't see it because he was smiling. He was like, I'm cool, I'm happy, I'm in control. And you said, hey, can you move your seat over there? And all of a sudden, the back of the mask popped out in a very unhealthy way. And now this student, because he's just dealing with so much, he just couldn't take another thing. Now the chair is across the room. He got a referral. Maybe security's coming to the classroom. Whatever other scenario could happen, our young people are trying to deal with it. And we have to provide safe ways for them to deal with it. So before I close, before we go to question and answer, I'm always not sure if to share this or not, but I do want to share this because it speaks to the young men that we're dealing with, and it speaks to some of the things that are happening in our society. So 2015, I was a vice principal at a school in Oakland, and a young man came into my office. It was the day we were going to do the screening of this. So Ever Forward Club was having our big fundraiser to raise money for our organization as we grow, as we prepare to grow. And he came in, and I was not going to work that day because I had a lot of work to do to get ready for the documentary. But I went in to help my team because there was a lot going on, and they needed some help around some big tour that was happening. And so we went in for the morning, and as I was packing in my office to leave, they called me on the radio and said, a student wants to see you. And so I said, well, send him back. And I was really excited to see him because I knew that he was coming to the documentary that night. And he saw me clean up my office. He said, well, I'm going to just give you this letter, and I'm going to go back to class. And I said, well, let me read it at least. You know, I can read pretty fast, you know. So he handed me this letter, and it said this. Dear Mom, Mr. Branch, and family, I'm planning to kill myself on today, tomorrow, or the next day. I've been studying what I'm going to do to commit suicide. And he goes on to talk about what he thought about doing. He said, but I found out there's another way to do it without feeling any pain. The reason why I'm going to do this is because it feels like I don't fit in this world. Now, I don't know about you. Like, I don't know what you've been through in your life. I don't know what challenges have hit you. But if you ever got to the place where you felt like you had enough, where you didn't want another setback, you didn't want another disappointment, you couldn't handle any more pain, you were just ready to be done. This young man at 11 years old had decided, I've had enough. You know, most of our young men don't commit suicide, although three or more every day do. Most of them take on other behaviors to deal with the pain and sadness of not feeling like they fit in the world. Alcohol, drugs, a combination of both, rampant unprotected sex to feel the sense of connecting to someone, violence, joining gangs, all kind of other behaviors that happen that are the slow suicides, that are the slow deaths. And if we don't provide places, if we don't begin supporting organizations that are helping our young people now, there's no need for them to go to jail. Like, we can see when they start to, like, fall down, and if we don't support them, we're going to lose them. And I've been committed to this work. I never intended to be a teacher. I never intended to run a nonprofit. I'm still trying to figure out what running a nonprofit means. But thank God for Stanford University for this fellowship that's absolutely transformed how we're doing our work, that's absolutely building us up and letting us grow. And so I know there's going to be time for questions. I want to make sure you have time for questions. I mean, I know you may have questions for the young men. And so thank you for your time.
Yes, we do have a few questions. Up to what age are these techniques effective, and how old is it too old to shift out of the mask?
Well, I think that, I would say that, you know, if you're an older person, I don't know how young, I think young people as old as, once they begin to think, they can know how they fit into the world. You know, I met a young man the other day, 8 years old, elementary school, and I asked him, hey, what do you think a mask is used for? And he said, to scare people. I said, what else? He said, that's it. Like, he's clear that a mask that he would need is, like, only reason I would put a mask on is to scare people, right? But he also knows where he fits in the hierarchy of his school. He already has a list of six hierarchy, and he calls himself at the bottom. He has a list. And so once our young people can think, we need to be asking them, hey, how are you doing? How are things going? And giving them tools so that they can begin to break out of it. And I think that these young men, they're in middle school, they're clear what mask they have to wear and how to break past it. So I think that's what I would say. I don't know the exact age, but I know that the messages of how to be a man start very young. And those messages have to be shifted if we're going to create healthy young men.
Okay. A question for the panel as well.
Excellent.
For the young men.
Excellent.
How do you know when a mask has been removed? How can you tell?
I'd say when you think you're being yourself instead of trying to cover yourself up.
Okay, and how does that look? What does that mean?
I'm not sure.
When you act cocky.
Okay.
Well, what does it look like? What does it look like when people are getting real? That's what we were talking about. What does it look like when people are getting real? When we're in a circle, what does it look like when people are getting real?
When they start to feel the pain, when they start to, you know, instead of just looking around and acting like, instead of looking.
Okay. I think it's when they show respect.
The way their voice started changing and their facial expressions.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's challenging too, right?
Yes.
Like to get clear about when you start to get real, when you break off your own mask and say, am I telling them stuff that they can handle? Sometimes you don't even know you're doing it.
That's difficult for all of us adults as well.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, I live in Oakland. What can I do to help? How can I help?
Well, that's awesome. Thank you. So right now, the Ever Forward Club, we're in this incredible space of preparing for growth. By the end of the year, our next year, we plan to be in 20 schools. We're right now in 9 schools, and we plan to be in 20 more. We need help with not only volunteers, that's, you know, hands and talents, we also need help with connecting to resources, connecting to funders, connecting to people who know how to write grants, who give grants. We're in this Bay Area with so much opportunity to connect to those kind of resources. And so if you have, I don't know who that was, you can see me afterwards. I have cards. And come along for the ride. We're running. So if you're ready to be a part of something that's absolutely moving forward, we would love to work with you if it matches what your heart is about. Thank you.
Okay, for the panel again. Do you have a dream, a goal for your life that you think, with support from people who believe in you, that you would like to pursue? What's your goal? What's your dream?
Speak up. My goal is to be a professional football player. And what people tell me is that all you need to do is have good grades and practice more and more. You could be able to be better at what you do.
My dream is to be a professional basketball player.
Well, right now, my goal is just to graduate from college. And I think that throughout those years in college, I'll be looking up to Branch, Ashanti Branch.
Okay.
My dream is to be a professional basketball player or a doctor.
All right. If I may interject, for the gentlemen, the first two, who have already completed their professional athletic sports, let's say you've made a few million, now you're 29 years old and you're retired. I know it seems like a long time away, but it'll come quickly. Then what?
I probably should have started my own brand.
I'll probably try to start my own league.
Okay. Okay, very good. Okay, the next question for the panel. Has your participation in the Ever Forward Club impacted who you call your friends?
Wait, can you say that again, please?
Your participation in the Mr. Branch's program, how has that affected you in terms of who you call your friends? Do you associate with different people as a result?
Not really. I usually hang around with people I knew since elementary and sixth grade.
Okay.
But other people, I could probably talk to them, but I won't be able to trust them.
For me, it's been the same people like I talk to. Just different people, and yeah, like nothing has changed for me because, well, associating with friends is just because they're just friends. They're not really. I mean, unless you go with it and they like influence you to do something, then. But that will be like on you, not on them, because you're the person that's supposed to manage yourself and not them.
Okay. Mr. Branch, this is a statement just for your, it's being addressed specifically to you. It says, you would do well to share your programs with the entire American culture. Our culture is built on masks. Removing them would benefit us all. So it's a strong endorsement from the audience.
Thank you. Thank you.
And also, as it relates to your program, what about the girls? The message that looks are all important, isn't that the same as being like manning up? Because the women are young girls, young women are so bombarded with the images and look for beauty. Would there be a version for the young girls to also?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this documentary, The Mask You Live In, is the second film from Jennifer Siebel Newsom. And the first film was called Misrepresentation. Mm. And that talked about the objectification, the underrepresentation of women in media, sports, society. And so these are partners of the same, young men. Thank you. And so one of the things that's really important is that that we understand that this is just an exploration. When you watch the documentary, which is now on Netflix, like you'll see that it's not giving you all the answers, but it is an exploration of the topics. One of the things that I believe is an Everfour Club. When we were, say, in our fourth year, third year, we had a young program for young women. But that requires a woman to manage that. And so as we're in this level of growth, we are focused on where our society has the, I believe, has a big, huge need. And it's supporting our young men to be healthy young men of integrity that will provide and create societies that are safe for women to be in. And so we know that there's a need for all of our youth, for all people. But we have decided that what we're going to focus on, what I'm going to focus on, is I'm going to focus on continuing to help those young men that were going through what I was going through, because I'm totally clear that that can happen. And as an organization, we have no employees. Like, this fellowship is the first time I've been able to work full time on the Ever Forward Club, but that will be changed starting very soon. But what I do know is that as an organization growing, we can't take on all these things that, you know, we have to take on as much as we can handle right now. And so as we're handling this, we're going to focus on that part and make it really incredible and strong. And that's our goal for this next coming future, next 12 years. Oh, he had a question about it.
Just one question. I'm just wondering, you talked about partnerships. Where does faith work into your program or your outreach?
My faith or the
faith? Faith in the program. How do you incorporate faith or, you know, religion or what have you as you reach out for partners or into your curriculum? I mean, because you're dealing with things of character and humanity. I'm just curious on your thoughts on how that fits into your program.
Yeah, the question was, how do we incorporate faith or religion in our program? And I'll say we don't incorporate it directly in any religious setting. Is anything you're dealing with schools? You really have a really those are things that you can do and you can't do. What I believe is that every young person comes from a different background, and for them to get really in touch with who they are, most of our young men are walking around like zombies. So they're walking around with their earphones plugged in, checked out to the world. And so first we got to get them in touch with their own heart. Like, who are you? Who are you trying to be? And I think once they get clear on who they are and who they want to be, then they can decide and they can judge what things that they want to what they want to connect to, any type of faith in terms of that. But, my job is to provide space for them to get really clear and become strong as they can. And that's what our work is about. Thank you for asking, though.
And one final question for the panel, if we could just go around and answer this question briefly. If you've been positively impacted by this work, this Ever Forward Club, and you feel like you would like to pay it forward, how do you want to pay that forward to other guys that come behind you in the future?
Well, for me, I would come back and help out Branch and, you know, help his organization and just keep going forth with it. Yeah.
Okay. I try to get other kids, like I see, like on the streets, like to join an organization that Branch had, or I try to like bring it back or something like that.
Okay. For me, I'll try to volunteer and help Branch out. Just tell more people about it.
I would try to volunteer and help out Branch with the program.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you for letting us have this opportunity. We really appreciate it.
My wish is that each of you on the panel will have a very special memory about this time of being here at the club, and I hope you hear yourself on the radio, and I hope that this has been meaningful to not only you guys, but everybody else in the audience. Ashante, thank you very much, and I think that this is getting close to our conclusion, and I need to say we thank you for being here and for those in the listening audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California in its 113th year of enlightened discussion like tonight, it's adjourned.